This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Sword and Laser, episode number 42. I'm Veronica Belmont.
I'm Tom Merritt. 42?
This is the Meaning of Life episode.
This is the answer to the great question of life, the universe, and everything, which
yes.
Stephen Hawking, in his recent book, claims to prove is not 42.
Like, really?
Well, he makes a joke about it, actually.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
That's good. I wonder if they were buddies, Douglas Adams and Stephen Hawking. They seem like they would be buddies.
I bet Douglas Adams wanted to be buddies with Stephen Hawking, and Hawking wanted to be buddies with Douglas Adams, but I have no idea whether they actually ever met. That's a good question.
So everyone has a favorite Douglas Adams quote, and so we pulled a few of ours, and my personal favorite is one that's actually on my Facebook page, which I think I've mentioned before, and it's, "I may not have gone where I intended to go, but I think I have ended up where I needed to be."
Aw, see, that's not a funny one. That's actually a sort of poignant one.
Yeah, I like
One of my favorites is, "Life is like a grapefruit. It's orange and squishy and has a few pips in it, and some folks have half a one for breakfast."
I found another one. "My doctor says that I have a malformed public duty gland and a natural deficiency in moral fiber," Ford muttered to himself, "and that I am therefore excused from saving universes."
Also, we mentioned before the show, time is an illusion, lunchtime, doubly so.
Doubly so.
Another good one.
Yes.
And I could never get the hang of Thursdays.
Good thing we record on Tuesdays, or else we'd be in trouble. But the big news this week, at least for me, is the new Game of Thrones teaser.
Well, for both of us, yeah. I mean, that was huge and long and full of birds.
Yes. For a second, I wondered if you were reading another Douglas Adams quote, but you were not.
No, that was just my brain that time.
That is actually true. And did you also see the little behind the scenes where they talked to George R. R. Martin as well?
Yeah, in fact, I liked that video better because you got to see some real full color looks at various scenes and various stuff. Whereas the trailer, I don't know if it's intentionally so or if the show is going to have this, but it was very dark. It wasn't exactly black and white, but the trailer is very like toned to look gray and wintry and looks cool.
Well, winter is coming. That's the whole point.
Yeah. And George R. R. Martin said that when he walked onto the set, he felt like he was walking into his own imagination.
Into his own dreams.
Yeah. Into his own dreams. Right.
Yeah. Which is so cool.
High praise.
Can you imagine that? Like having this whole world inside your head and then having it come to real life, like be made into a reality where the characters you've worked so long on and written so lovingly are now like standing in front of you?
Oh, yeah. That would be crazy. And done right. Usually you'd be afraid to do that because you'd walk in and be like, well, no, that's not the way that person looks. And this castle's totally wrong. And instead to have it be like, oh my God!
I know
to
have Winterfell like painstakingly crafted, like down to the woodwork and the stones and the emblem on the stones and everything is so well done. Like HBO knows how to do this kind of stuff, and I can't wait to start watching the show. Like the more video I see about it and the more I hear people talking about it, the more excited I get.
Yeah, same here. HBO does such a good job with shows. I've watched so many of them now, and I don't think I've ever been disappointed.
Yeah,
with one that was recommended to me.
I don't think so.
There've been a few that I like Hung, for instance, that mm-hmm. no one's ever recommended to me, and I've watched them and been like, eh, it doesn't draw me in, whatever.
Yeah.
But True Blood, Entourage, The Wire.
Yeah.
Rome.
Rome was Ed great. Wood. You know, that's really what made me feel like comfortable with this whole idea was Rome.
Yeah.
Because I know they're good at like period pieces like that. And I know they can do scenes and costumes and characters in the way that I would expect them to do for Game of Thrones. So I think it's going to be pretty close.
Have they ever done a fantasy?
No.
Showtime did Stargate SG-1.
Yeah, but that's sci-fi.
When it first started. That was sci-fi and it was Showtime.
This is really the first big fantasy series that I can remember since probably Hercules or Xena.
Yeah, I'm trying to I mean, there's Merlin.
Okay.
On BBC.
Did they play that on sci-fi here?
Yeah, they did.
They did.
The new series has just started in the UK. So, you know, in a year or so, we should get it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there's that.
Yeah,
but I think this
yeah.
is going to be the biggest one in a really, really long time.
It's like when HBO did The Wire, they had never done a cop show before. And The Wire was so much more than a cop show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so well done. I feel like they're taking that same stance here, which is like, we would never do sci-fi fantasy, but since we are, we're going to do it really, really well.
Exactly. Well, enough about that. We should probably move on to the next topic, or we could talk about this for the entire show.
We probably could, but we should give a mention to Paul Melko's The Wall of the Universe. It's just out. If you like alternative universe, alternate universe books, you may be very excited by this. IO9 has a good review up of it. If you must know, a man named John Rayburn meets another version of himself from another universe. This other John, dubbed John Prime, is less altruistic than the John that you first meet, and he tricks our John into jumping to another universe using a device that's only good for one-way journeys. Winds up in a universe that's stuck in the 1950s, and then fun stuff happens, like he invents pinball.
I'm confused already.
Yeah, so it's already like twisting your mind, where it's like you've got more than one character in more than one universe. I love the idea of being stuck in a 1950s universe, and the book has finally gotten a deal for a sequel. And it sounds like there may be a movie on the first book.
Ooh, very cool. You know what this kind of reminds me of? That episode of Futurama where they make the time machine that can only travel forward in time so you don't mess up the past.
Right, and you have to just keep going.
You have to keep going
all the way around.
But then it just so happens that the universe reinvents itself exactly every single time it remakes. So
yeah.
You can just kind of pick up where you left off. Hilarious.
And if you overshoot, yeah, just go through it again.
Yeah, it takes a while, but you get there eventually. And always try to kill Hitler on that one way through.
Never works, though.
Never works. Next, William Gibson, of course, one of our favorite authors, is coming out with a new book, I think today. Is that
Zero
true?
History just arrived on my doorstep.
Ooh, awesome.
I've read about, let's see, two pages.
You already started, huh?
Yeah, I just cracked it open. I like to do that when I get like a book so quickly, to just be like, okay, how does it start? What do we do? And of course, William Gibson, such a good writer. But when you start in on a book, you start in the middle of a conversation.
Oh, yeah. He just dumps you right in. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, wait, who is this person? What town are they in? Why
What's
is that
going on?
So 2 pages in probably took me a lot longer than 2 pages would normally take.
And I got a big kick out of this article in IO9. He did an interview with Anna Lee, and one of the things they talked about was his obsession with the Japanese brand Buzz Rixon,
mm-hmm.
Which he talks about in Pattern Recognition. And I just got a big kick out of hearing that he's really actually obsessed with this brand. It's a Japanese brand that reproduces U.S. military wear, like really high quality bomber jackets and that kind of stuff. And I think that's kind of neat. I think that's kind of cool. And I would like to check those out. I actually Googled them online a while ago.
Yeah. And in Zero History, you're gonna see Hollis Henry working mm-hmm. for global marketing magnate Hubertus Bigend. So
it's the same characters then. Is it a sequel?
Yeah. Some familiar names. I don't know if it's exactly a sequel or if it's just in the universe. I actually can't wait to find out.
Yeah.
But he also dropped some hints about some Twitter tie-in that's going to happen. All he would say is you should keep an eye on the Twitter accounts GayDolphin1 and GayDolphin2.
That is the number one and the number two.
Right.
Not spelled out.
Not spelled out. And those of you who read the novel know what those accounts are related to, and there will be a little extra novellular content.
Extra novellular.
I think I just made that word up.
That's a good word.
Yeah, thank you.
So we had a few more articles, but I think we're going to run a little bit long in this episode anyway, so maybe we should save them for the next time. What do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, there's always these good things going on about, you know, how many definitions of science fiction are there and the rules of awesome sci-fi fantasy art. But we've got a book to wrap up.
We do, indeed. But first, a word from our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook to consider is The City and the City by China Mieville, read by John Lee.
For free, I would also recommend, I'm sorry to do, I'm
that's
to do,
okay.
Zero History by William Gibson is available as an audiobook.
Oh, already, huh?
So if you're like, you know, I don't want to hold on to that big hardback that's out, get the audio version.
Excellent. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword. Yeah, so I have been listening to The City and the City, and it is intense. There's a lot of information going on there, but we actually have an email about it coming up a little bit later, or rather a forum posting that I don't want to get into too much, but we'll discuss some points that he brought up.
Yeah, well, it is time to bare your sword or clean your laser, depending on which side of the audience. You don't have to pick sides, by the way. Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young sort of played that aspect up at the Dragon Con, but
I made a poll.
Sword and the lasers can all get along.
Lasers are beating my swords.
You could be a swazer.
A swazer.
Or a laser.
A lasord. Lasord.
Like swazer.
Swarzer.
Swarzer.
Swarzer. Yeah, I like Swayzord because that sounds like Patrick Swayze to me.
Right.
Swayzord. So our first topic. Okay, so first of all, confession time again.
Uh-oh. What'd you do?
I haven't finished the book yet.
Can I, you know, before I, since I will not judge you, because at least you are admitting it, when we did The Mist of Avalon, I hadn't quite finished that book yet.
What?
I knew how it ended.
You love Arthurian legend.
I know, but I hadn't quite got to the end, and I have finished it since.
Is that why you could pull it off? Wait. Is that why you could pull it off because you knew the whole story already, so you could just like pretend like you had read it?
Pretty much.
Damn, you're good, Merritt.
But you haven't finished As a Harsh Mistress, have you?
No, I haven't. Dragon Con kind of got in the way, and other projects kind of got in the way. I'm sorry. I fail. I'm prepared for my flogging.
There's no flogging. There's no judgment here.
But there are spoilers.
They're the only spoilers. That is here. Have you seen the MC Frontalot song?
No.
Spoiler alert. I think it's called Spoiler Alert. But it's the entire song is spoilers.
Oh, that's funny.
Like the lyrics of the song just spoil like every movie and book. He like spoils the ending of Medea's play from like, you know, thousands of years ago. It's great.
He's
anyway,
awesome.
Big spoiler on the Goodreads forum, huh?
Yes, there was a big spoiler on the Goodreads forum, and the title was almost kind of a spoiler, and that's how I got spoiled. Micah started a thread, and just so you guys know, if you haven't finished it, spoilers. So stop listening, or fast forward until later, way later.
Or spoilers.
Yes, spoilers. Spoilers, as he wrote. Micah said, "Why did he die? Spoilers."
So why did he die is a little bit of a spoiler because you're like, oh, somebody
died. And then I made the mistake of reading the first.
It did say spoilers.
No, it didn't. Not then.
Oh, really?
It got added after I bitched and moaned
and
about it in the thread.
And now he's
going
to be like, no, I have to fix that typo.
Yeah. I could fix it right now. I have that authority. I'll fix it. But then it won't be as funny.
No.
O-I-L-E-R-S. Too late.
We kid because we love.
My kid. Hey, Micah writes, I finished the book this week, and after reading through all the discussions, I found a subject that had not yet been addressed. Mike, why did he die? And did he have to? And did you like his character? I really enjoyed the depiction of this self-aware computer. He was juvenile, yes, but that added a little humor to an otherwise bleak story. I like the parts where he is trying to analyze jokes and see why they are funny, or funny every time. Much like a kid age 5 to 8 in my experience. Also the fact that he views a revolution as a game to win. Like Candyland, but with catapults and rocks to throw.
Right.
Mike was such an integral part of the revolution that I found his ending to be a sad cop-out to an otherwise strongly put-together ending. Did Heinlein not know how to end his storyline better than him vanishing into thin air, so to speak? I would have much preferred to find out why he died, i.e. too much damage, as they discussed in the book, could happen. But the ending I really would have loved to read for him would be to survive as a silent hero of the revolution, able to sit with Manuel and Wyo and keep on telling jokes, with no need of medals or praise, but secure in the knowledge that he helped win the game of revolution with the loonies.
Well, so this is a big spoiler for you, but I was a little in the same mind as Micah as far as when I got to that end, and he doesn't actually die.
No.
I don't know how much I want to tell you, though, because this doesn't spoil everything about the circumstances. But if I can be somewhat obtuse, I felt like it was a realistic ending.
Mm.
And I was bugged but like Micah at first, but then the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, no, this could happen. And you wouldn't know any more than you know.
Oh, I just got another spoiler reading a response.
Why did you
Nikolai?
Do that?
I don't know, because I thought I had been all the spoils I needed to be spoiled in that thread. Darn it. Oh, well. Well, Chris makes an excellent point. He or she, actually, I can't tell by the name. I always thought that Mike left because Manny was able to finally be the leader of Luna. Mike, to me, was just a metaphor in a way for Manny's growth, just externalized by the author to make the story more interesting. Or maybe I am smoking crack.
Well, here's the thing. The way they end Mike leaves it open to your interpretation of why it happened.
Okay.
It could be damage. It could be his choice. It could be something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
But it does nag at you. I know what Mike is talking about, because even thinking to myself, well, no, this is realistic, there is a part of me that's like, but I want to know. That's why I read stories.
Don't they make good backups of their machines?
Well, yeah, there's that whole aspect of Mike, right, where it's like he could be a self-aware, you know, artificial intelligence, and yet he couldn't, like, do a streaming video.
Yeah.
And calculate trajectories at the same time.
You know, that kind of bothered me. I think it was just because of the time when Heinlein wrote this that he couldn't yet anticipate how far technology was going to grow and improve. And the idea that he had to focus all of his, you know, all of his RAM, everything built into Mike, just to make a, like, a face that you know, looked like a real human.
Yeah. Which,
and that's so easy now.
Well, yeah. I mean, granted, we can't make one that looks identical to a human.
No.
The way that Mike was.
Right.
But we also don't have self-aware computers. The amount of computing power postulated to make you believe that he's self-aware means, like, he should be able to put a decent face up there.
Exactly. I did like how he said that once he made the background, he could kind of cache that background and have it be static, you know, the whole time, so he didn't have to work on that again.
Obviously, Heinlein did know some computing, but he's working from the limitations of the time that he's writing in.
Yeah, and I think he actually did very admirably for that. And then there is a post by Scott called Human Judgment versus Machines that I found very interesting. He said, I just finished reading Chapter 6, and the three revolutionaries asking Mike for a probability of revolutionary success reminds me of the recent financial disaster. Complex derivatives, mortgage origination, stock market management, portfolio purchasing decisions, etc. These decisions were recently turned over to the wisdom of PhD scientists, algorithms, and machines. Rogue hedge fund managers have turned over all decisions related to their portfolio to computers. Is this a way to avoid human judgment? Professor Amar, I don't know how to say that name, Bide?
Bide.
B-H-I-D-E. Yes. Recently appeared on HBR IdeaCast and spoke of professionals, doctors, financial managers, and how they transfer decision-making to computers to the detriment of their clients. He said computers were very good at organizing inanimate objects, but not so good at organizing and predicting human behavior. Professor Bide was promoting a new book called A Call for Judgment, Sensible Finance for a Dynamic Economy. I wonder if he is correct. Have we transferred too much judgment to machines? Is this to our detriment? Do we need more human intuition and less algorithm-driven decision-making? What do you guys think?
Well, this is another thing that William Gibson was talking about in that interview we were mentioning earlier, is the idea that we have actually outsourced a lot of our decision-making to Google.
Right.
You know, and the idea of Google as an artificial intelligence, not the way we imagined it, like Mike in The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, but as a collective brain that we're all participating in.
It's a hive mind. Google is essentially becoming a hive mind for us.
And the hive mind becomes self-aware because of us. So my gut reaction to any concern like this is always, neither is it too much or not enough. It's always a tool, right? And you can take it too far, and you can put too many things in the hands of computers without proper supervision, and it will be a disaster. But if you didn't put any in the hands of computers, you would be missing out, and you wouldn't be achieving as much as possible, right? So it has to be a balance. You have to use it for what it's good for, and you also have to try it to figure out what it's good for, or you'll never find out.
Computers, what are they good for? Absolutely nothing.
Say it again.
Computers, what are they good for? Absolutely nothing.
Veronica is a computer, by the way. That's
And then the final thread was by the ever prolific Lepton, who was writing about The City and the City, which I am also currently reading right now. And there's a few spoilers in this, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. But if you're interested in reading the book, or you have already read the book, or are starting to read the book, he's made some really interesting points about Mieville and the way that he just kind of expects you to understand a lot of the issues and subjects going on in the story. And he wrote a quite a long post about a lot of the really salient points in the book. So take a look at that if you've got some time and want to really kind of dive into the thought process behind the book and what makes it so interesting and what they're trying to get at.
This is always a good debate to have regarding inscrutability. Because a lot of times it's easy to jump to the conclusion that because I don't understand a book or I don't have all the facts, it's a bad book. And that's not true. Ulysses by James Joyce, incredibly difficult to understand. Most people can't read it without a guidebook to explain what's going on. But Ulysses isn't a piece of trash because of that. It's an amazing book. Gravity's Rainbow, Thomas Pynchon, same way. Very difficult to get through. I'm not trying to say that The City and the City is comparable to Ulysses, but I'm just saying, like, just because it's hard to understand and it assumes a lot of knowledge doesn't mean it's bad. Maybe it just needs a little guide.
Well, there's another point that Lepton's trying to make, is that he feels like Mieville is squandering these opportunities to really explore some of the big issues that he brings up in the book, and instead kind of, you know, glosses over them in a way that's convenient for the storyline.
Gotcha.
So if you're reading it, definitely check out this post. It's very thought through and very well written. And a lot of people are disagreeing with him, though. So, you know, jump in on the conversation there.
I am reading, I've just started reading Zero History, obviously. And I'm reading The Grand Design by Stephen Hawking and Before They Are Hanged, Joe Abercrombie. So these are my post-Moon is a Harsh Mistress works. I got plenty to read.
I'm kind of in the same spot. I'm also finishing up Before They Are Hanged. I'm about halfway through, actually, so I've got a ways to go on that. I'm of course finishing up The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, and I picked up a few other books from Dragon Con that we need to get into. And then I've got, you know, a few other side projects that I'm working on. And it's just, man, where do you get the time? I also picked up a book. We were both on a panel with P.G. Holyfield. And he let me have a copy of his new book. And
Murder at Avedon Hill.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get into it.
Right here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he lent me a copy as well.
Nice. And he's a friend of the show. So if you guys want an extra book to pick up, read something different, check out Murder at Avedon Hill by P.G. Holyfield. He's a super nice guy.
It is on my to-read list for sure.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, should we go to some emails?
let us do do we need to wrap up Moon as a Harsh Mistress first?
Oh yeah, I mean that's kind of all I have to say about it because I haven't finished it yet. But if there's anything else you want to add, by all means.
I want to hear the rest of what you think at the end, so we may do a post-wrap Veronica wrap-up. But I have to say, because I listened to the audiobook, and I didn't have any problems getting into it, as we've discussed before, but I did find it dragged a little, and having an audiobook helped with that. When it got to those sort of philosophical discussions, it was easy to get through because it was just listening to a conversation. And if I wasn't that interested in the conversation, it kept going. I didn't have to force myself to slog through it. So in that way, having an audiobook was a huge advantage. And then I felt like once the revolution actually started getting going and we started seeing put in practice, Heinlein did a great job of showing how the theories that you spent so much time learning would run into problems in reality. Mm-hmm. So the revolution doesn't go exactly as planned, or else you know that would be a criticism I would have. They run into problems. They run into dangers, and it ends up being, you know, maybe a little cliche in that most of the characters are, you know, are able to muddle through somehow and all of that. But it goes in unexpected directions and they have to adapt on the fly. And the prof, who's always seems like, oh, I know everything that's going to happen and I can plan for it. And you've got Mike, who's like, oh, I can plan the probabilities. Those probabilities all of a sudden skyrocket into improbabilities. And Mike's sitting there saying, well, don't worry, you know, it has to be improbable for a while for it to become probable again. So I think it's really well navigated in the telling that makes it sound like a real revolution. What bothered me about it is there are some points where Heinlein is very obviously trying to parallel the American Revolution. He even steals lines from Jefferson and Churchill and you know all the greatest speakers, and he steals concepts and tries to make it the American Revolution on the moon. And that part fell flat for me. I felt like it should have been different. It should have been based on their own issues in some way rather than trying to force this parallel where he did, because he didn't need to. Most of the rest of the revolution makes perfect sense based on the conditions of the moon.
Well, it is true that history often repeats itself. So yes. making parallels kind of does make sense because a lot of the same issues are bound to come up in this kind of scenario. I mean, it is very similar. There's a colony and then there's, you know, the motherland, and you know, similar problems are going to come up.
Certainly.
But at the same time, since they are in space and since it is this colony of almost, you know, convicts and lawbreakers and people of that sort, as opposed to being colonists, I mean, there are some differences there. I mean, you could go in a lot of different directions with it. And maybe he's not taking advantage of that, like you said.
He should parallel it more with Australia then.
I didn't want to say that. But I guess you did. I hope we have no Australian
the New Zealanders
viewers
are laughing.
Who are offended right now.
The Kiwis are laughing right now.
But we do have to pick another book, but I think we're going to do it the democratic route once again. And we got a recommendation.
That does not mean this is democracy, people.
Don't get any funny ideas. we got a great email from Roman, and Roman was actually in the audience at the live show. Which is awesome,
right,
by the way. And he wanted to see some more classic fantasy. And he goes back to like the 70s, but we could go back even further if we wanted to. But we're going to post maybe 4 or 5 books in a poll and have you guys vote on them. And then the top pick will start reading. But not this week. You know, finish up The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Read whatever you've got going on right now. We'll post the poll in the forums and we'll get to it within the next week, week and a half, 2 weeks.
Roman also, if you remember from the Dragon Con episode, asked the question, could we start doing a 5-minute segment looking back at classic epic fantasy of the 70s and 80s as sort of a, you know, sort of this week in history, maybe kind of segment. And I like that idea, not just for fantasy, but for sci-fi too. So let us know what you guys think. Would you like a sort of a historical look back thing? It wouldn't necessarily have to be this week in history, but just sort of a, you know, 30 years ago, from today, such this book was popular 30 to 40 years ago. Milestone kind of looks back. Just a little segment.
I think that would be fun.
Yeah, I think so too.
And while I'm thinking of it, before we get to the rest of Roman's email, I wanted to say thank you to Rick, who was also at the live show, who gave Tom and I cans of rambutan or nagaw from Thailand.
We need to open them up on the show together.
And if you guys remember, that is the fruit that Anderson Lake becomes obsessed with in The Wind-Up Girl.
And they look just like he described
them. I know.
It's creepy.
And then I actually saw an episode of No Reservations when they were in Thailand, and I saw them in the market. I was like, oh my God!
They're real!
They're real things! Sorry, I'm totally like peeking out the audio in my excitement. I apologize. But Rick, it was great to meet you, and thank you so much for the gift. I did have to check my luggage because of it, but no big deal. Totally worth it. Can't wait to try it. I haven't cracked it open yet, but I think we should do it together,
Tom. I wrapped mine in sword and laser t-shirts to protect it, and it worked out.
All right. Our next email comes from Peter, and he writes, Tom and Veronica, a late edition, but just finished reading Accelerando by Charles...
Accelerando!
By
Sounds
Charles
like
Strauss.
Otter.
It does. Or something that Stan Lee would say.
Yes.
Accelerando. The Earth and the inner planets are completely deconstructed and rebuilt into data storage and processing power for the digital needs of the human race. So, voluntary, resource-savvy, non-Armageddon-style Earth recycling.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that idea a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to check out Accelerando. And finally, from Peggy, I just listened to episode number 40. I highly recommend Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell in the audio version. I got this at my library, and it was very good. Don't give up on the somewhat boring beginning. It's a superb story. Thanks, Peggy.
As I mentioned, I did attempt to start reading that, and I had some trouble getting through the beginning, but it's good to know that the audio version may help me get past that part, the whole beginning of the story, which I found boring.
Peggy's like, don't give up.
Don't give up,
Veronica.
Keep going. Persevere. All right. Well, thanks to our partner, StickerFoo. Use the code SWORD1 and get 10% off the stickers at www.stickerfu.com.
Hey.
They've got great geeky stuff over there. Harry Potter, you know, what else?
Hogwarts,
BSG stuff, Hogwarts.
Stickers for your car.
Great stuff. Yeah. And if you want to get in touch with us and drop us a line, send an email to theswordandlaser@gmail.com. I almost forgot the address there for a second. Or check out the website at swordandlaser.com. And, of course, visit the Goodreads forum at goodreads.com and search for The Sword and Laser or hit the discussion button up on our website.
I'm in there now posting and stuff.
I know. You're doing a good job. I saw your little post about...
being guilted at Dragon Con?
Well, that. But I was more talking about Songs of Ice and England.
Ah, yes, my little Joe Abercrombie, George R. R. Martin
comparison thread.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.